Om Agyanati Mirandasya Vinanjana Sadapaya Chaksho Unmini Chamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Ukham Kuroti Pachuram Angam Mangayate Guru Vyakipata Mahamvande Shri Gurave Natanana Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pustaya Guru Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Itinamane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Prasarane Yerveshesha Sanyavari Vastachare Sitarane Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sivari Gidharha Shivasari Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare I've been asked to speak from a verse from Bhagavad Gita. And I've quickly picked the verse I'll speak from the second chapter, verse number 66. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nasti buddhya ayuktasya na cha yuktasya bhavana na cha bhavayata santir ashantasya kuta sukha. Translation: one who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? Commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Unless one is in Krishna consciousness, there is no possibility of peace. So it is confirmed in this fifth chapter that when one understands that Krishna is the only enjoyer of all the good results of sacrifice and penance, that he is the proprietor of all universal manifestations, and that he is the real friend of all living entities, then only can one have real peace. Therefore, if one is not in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be a final goal for the mind. Disturbance is due to want of an ultimate goal, and when one is certain that Krishna is the enjoyer, proprietor, and friend of everyone and everything, then one can, with a steady mind, bring about peace. Therefore, one who is engaged without a relationship with Krishna is certainly always in distress and is without peace, however much he may make a show of peace and spiritual advancement in life. Krishna consciousness is a self-manifested peaceful condition which can be achieved only in relationship with Krishna. I picked this verse for a couple of reasons. One is that most people can relate to a couple of the points that Krishna is making in this verse. Many people, in fact, probably everybody can understand what it means when you don't have a good connection. Internet, I'm talking about, of course. Or your mobile phones. If you don't have a good connection, you can't download files, you can't upload files, you can't check the news. You don't have access to a lot of information that you otherwise would like to have access to. If you don't have a good phone connection, you can't call your wife from work. You might get a little frustrated when you're driving in the car and you need the GPS, you don't know where you're going. We all have this experience of what it is like to not have a good connection. That's what Krishna is also using the same word here, maybe not in the same context. But he's using the word connection, and he's saying that for one who hasn't got a good connection with the Supreme, can have neither a controlled mind nor a steady intelligence, without which there's no possibility of peace. The other word that I thought here was relevant, not only the word connection is relevant and understandable, but peace, of course, is something that's also relevant, maybe not as understandable, because sometimes it's so elusive and not able to be obtained as easily as we would like. But everybody would like it. Individually, people would like to experience peace. When the mind is very disturbed, as Srila Prabhupada explains in his commentary, why the mind is so disturbed is for want of an ultimate goal. We'll get into this, some of these things, in a little more detail. But if there's no ultimate goal or no ultimate resting place for the mind to seek shelter, then there's always that agitated state of consciousness, which is one is looking for something better, one is looking for shelter. It's natural. It's natural for the living being to be peaceful, it's natural for the living entity to be looking for shelter. But we find sometimes that there are many distractions and disturbances in life that come without invitation. In fact, Srimad Bhagavatam even gives an example. Tasyaivahi to prayatita kovido talabhita yad brahmatam upariyada. Sutta Goswami explains that persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined, they don't endeavor for happiness which is available from going to the highest planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest planet, Patalaloka, because they know that as far as happiness is derived from sense satisfaction is concerned, it comes automatically in due course of time, just as in due course of time, miseries come without asking for them. Sutta Goswami says that this is something that's easily relatable also. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, let me suffer today. How can I make plans for suffering? Miseries come without planning for them. We don't ask for them. We don't make plans for them. They come. Sometimes many unfortunate circumstances may befall us, and we make no effort to get them. Still they appear. So Sudha Goswami says, those persons who are intelligent and philosophically inclined, they don't endeavor also for happiness, because they know that as far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it comes just in due course of time, just as in due course of time, miseries come without asking for them. They don't endeavor for either. Of course, that could be a confusing concept, because by nature, everybody wants to be happy. And therefore, most people endeavor for it. A difficulty is, of course, is if we do not know what that happiness is, which Krishna is speaking about in this verse. Krishna says, if one's not connected to the Supreme, he can have neither a controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there can't be peace. And how can it be happiness without peace? So, how can there be happiness as long as when one gets the fulfillment of his desires, it only temporarily brings happiness, and immediately he needs something, or very soon thereafter, he needs something else. His mind is going from one thing to the next, as Srila Prabhupada says, for lack of an ultimate goal for the mind. The mind is always looking for something better. fact, I oftentimes use a very simple analogy that, again, people can relate to, is that when anybody, usually what happens is when we get this, the latest technology, the latest gadget, right? Then the makers of those products always make you think there's something better that you need, and they agitate you to get it. Because they want you to spend money, obviously. And if you listen to them enough, before you know it, even though you could do everything you want with an iPhone 3, they've got you making you convinced that you need an iPhone 4, you need a 5, a 6, 7, 8. I think they're up to 10. 10, no? I lost track. I don't have an iPhone. I use a Kindle. But the fact is that a modern society is programmed in such a way that people take advantage of the fact that everybody's always thinking we need something better. And it's called exploitation. But if we're not careful, we may be very, very vulnerable to exploitation. If we don't have a resting place for the mind. In fact, there's a nice story I'll tell in this connection. It's a story from our tradition. It just came to my mind. It's a story about one of our acharyas, teachers, spiritual teachers in our tradition. His name is Raghunath Das. And he later in life became a Goswami, who's very austere. His austerities and his control of his mind and senses was very profound. But actually, he was born of a very wealthy landowner. His name was Govardhan Majumdar. And Govardhan was extremely wealthy landowner because he would exact tax on the citizens, and he was able himself to keep, this was 500 years ago, like 200,000 coins a month for exacting taxes. And because he was very wealthy, he had one son and he wanted the best for his son. And his son was known as Raghunath. And he would pamper his son. Govardhan was a pious man. He could recognize that there were many saintly people, and he was always eager to seek blessings from saintly people. But nonetheless, he lived in comfort. You could even say lived in squalor. And he wanted his son to have that same experience, and therefore he arranged for his son to be carried everywhere in a palanquin. He arranged for his son to not have to observe the sufferings of the world, and would hide him, like the story of Buddha. You know, they would hide him from seeing any sufferings. He would pave the path that his son would have to walk on with flower petals so he wouldn't have to hurt his feet. And at every entrance of his palace, there was a palanquin waiting for him to carry him from one place to the next. He wanted Raghunath to follow, to get the best of everything that he had, and to follow the way he was living. And the spiritual master of Govardhan Majumdar, he was a spiritual teacher. His name was Balaram Acharya. And Balaram Acharya's spiritual master was known as Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur, Namacharya of the holy name, he used to chant 100,000 names of Hare Krishna Mahamantra a day. It would take him maybe 20, 21 hours. He would chant continuously all day long. He was absorbed in a higher state of consciousness. He was absorbed in Krishna. His mind was fixed. he was connected to the Supreme. And therefore, because he was in such a state of consciousness, he was not in any way attracted or allured by any wealth, power. None of the allurements of this world could attract him. And one time, Govardhan Majumdar, this wealthy landholder, he wanted his son Raghunath to get a blessing from Haridas Thakur. Because he thought, to get blessings from saintly person, this is good. This is good. So he asked his teacher, Balaram Acharya, if he would take him to Haridas Thakur for blessing. But before taking Raghunath Das, he prepared a very opulent cart filled with all kinds of ornaments, decorative ornaments, gold ornaments, jewels, cloth, silver, precious metals. He was thinking, certainly when Haridas Thakur sees what I'm sending for him, he'll give a good blessing to my son. So he prepared this cart load full of opulence, and he sent his son Raghunath with Raghunath's guards, who were always guarding him and protecting him, and Raghunath's personal servants. He sent all of them to Balaram Acharya's home, where Haridas Thakur was, and asked Balaram Acharya, please take Raghunath there and ask Haridas Thakur if he'll give my son a benediction. Balaram Acharya responded favorably. He went with all the royal paraphernalia that he was asked to bring. He didn't personally bring it, but Govardhan's personal servants and guards, they took everything, and they accompanied Raghunath to where Haridas Thakur was sitting, absorbed in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. And then Balaram Acharya approached Haridas Thakur and said, I brought with me, this is Raghunath, he's son of Govardhan Majumdar. And his father, Govardhan, has brought you some very wonderful gifts. And he pointed to the gifts, the cart, Haridas Thakur. He didn't even look. They were of no interest to him. They were like garbage on the street in his eyes. He didn't need them for his own lifestyle, to maintain his lifestyle. He lived very simply. So, of course, he wasn't allured by, you could say, Govardhan's attempt to sway him in a way to give the kind of benediction he would like his son to have. So Balaram Acharya offered the cart, and Haridas said, what is it? What would you like? He says, Govardhan is asking that you please give his son a blessing. So Haridas Thakur immediately responded with a blessing that he wanted to give Raghunath. And Balaram Acharya suspected this blessing was going to be something that Govardhan wouldn't want to hear. So he made a very, very loud sound, sneezing, so that none of the guards and none of the servants could hear. Haridas said, I bless that you renounce the whole world. That was his blessing. Now, Balaram Acharya heard it, but nobody else could hear. So when Balaram Acharya brought Raghunath back to his father, Govardhan, Govardhan asked Balaram Acharya, first he asked his guards, did my son see Haridas Thakur? And he said, yes, he saw, he was introduced. Did Haridas Thakur give him a blessing? And he said something, but we couldn't hear it. And he asked another guard, he said something, but we didn't hear. He asked the servants, yes, he got a blessing,
But we didn't hear what he said. So he asked Balaramacharya, "You introduced him. Did he get a blessing?" And Balaramacharya said, "Oh yes, yes, he got a blessing." "What blessing did he get?" And Balaramacharya said, "Haridas Thakur gave your son the blessing that he would control the whole world." And when Govardhan Majumdar heard that blessing, he said, "How wonderful! I control this whole tract of land. But Haridas Thakur has given a blessing to my son that he will control the whole world." So he was very satisfied when he heard that. Now, but why did Balaramacharya make this statement? Was he lying? Actually, no, he wasn't lying. There was a hidden meaning to that statement. The hidden meaning to that statement is that although that Haridas Thakur gave Raghunath Das the blessing that he would control the whole world, it meant that Raghunath Das would not be controlled by anything in this world. Nothing in this world could allure him. Nothing could attract him. Because he would be renounced from this world. So many temptations may come, just as Haridas Thakur was not tempted by the cartload of wealth. Raghunath Das, he got the blessing that he would control the whole world because he got the blessing that he would be renounced from this world. Whatever temptations would be there, whatever allurements would be there, Raghunath Das was not attracted to them. Wow. Now, this gets back to the point that we were speaking about before. That for one who cannot control the mind, one who cannot control the intelligence, does not, one who's not connected to the Supreme can have either controlled mind or steady intelligence, without which there could be no possibility of peace. How can there be any happiness without peace? It begins by learning how to control the mind from the temptations that are constantly being bombarded upon us. And without any ultimate goal for the mind will always think that no matter what I have, there's something better. No matter what I get, once I've gotten it, there's something better. And in the kind of society we live today, if somebody doesn't understand the difference between what we want and what we need, we're in trouble. We're in big trouble. There's a big difference to know what we want and what we need. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Yavabriyeta jataram tavat svatvam hidehinam arikam yobi manyata sastinam dandam arhati. This was a verse spoken by Narada Muni to Yudhishthira Maharaj. When Yudhishthira Maharaj said to Narada Muni, he said, Yudhishthira Maharaj said, "I am Griha Medadi. I am a householder and I've lost whole conception of what is the goal of life. Can you please instruct me? What is the goal of life? How can I live this life and be successful and achieve perfection according to the rules and regulations given in the scriptures?" Narada Muni gave him many instructions about ideal grihastha life or householder life. But one of the verses that he said was this verse we just spoke. Yavagriyeta tavat satsam hi dehinam. One should aspire for enough wealth necessary to maintain body and soul together. One who aspires for more than this is considered to be a thief and deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. This is Narada Muni. Yudhishthira Maharaj says, "You're a brahmachari, please instruct me." And many things he said, but this is one of the verses he said. What one needs and what one wants. Sometimes we may say, "Well, if I don't get it, I'll never be happy, therefore I need it." Therefore, we have this justification of what we need, that my mind is always in anxiety. If I don't have it, therefore I must need it. But actually, Narada Muni says, what is that which is necessary to maintain body and soul together. This is what human life is meant. How to live. How to maintain body and soul together. Because the goal of life, kamasya nendriya pratiya labo jivete yavata jivasya tatva jigyasa natoryasya karmabhi. Life's desires shouldn't be directed simply for sense gratification. One should desire to live because the human form of life enables one to inquire into the absolute truth. That should be the goal of all of one's work. That's the goal of our work. It's not simply sense gratification. It's how to use this body for self-realization. Our same example of our iPhone 10. If somebody gives you an iPhone 10, says, here, this is yours, wouldn't you want to use it to its full potential? Wouldn't you want to know what it does? Right? You've got an iPhone 6 and somebody gives you an iPhone 10. Immediately you think, you open up the manual, wow, what does it do? Facial recognition. Wow, I can't do that with my iPhone 6. How do I get the facial recognition? You mean, I don't know all the stuff. I don't know everything. I've seen the advertisements. They're everywhere. Facial recognition. It's about as much as I know about what the i10 does, but I'm sure if I read the manual, I'd find a lot of things I could do with that iPhone 10. It's natural. When you get a gift, you want to use it to its full potential. What about the human form of life? Why use the human form of life for sense gratification when the human form of life is meant for self-realization? It's the same thing. Why use the iPhone 10 simply to make a couple of phone calls? Why not just use the iPhone 3? Or why don't you just get a flip phone? It's a waste. Human form of life is meant for self-realization. Why just use it for sense gratification? There has to be a higher purpose. So, Sutta Goswami says, kamasya nendriya pratiya labo jiviyati yavata jivasya tatva jigyasa nato yesh chaya karmabhi. Life desires shouldn't be just simply directed towards enjoyment. One should desire to live because the human form of life enables one to inquire to the absolute truth. What is my connection with the Supreme? That's all. What is my connection with the Supreme? I must have some connection. Because the Supreme is Aham Bija Pratapita, Krishna says. I'm the seed-giving father of all living beings. He doesn't just say, I'm the seed-giving father of the Americans. I'm the seed-giving father of the Indians. I'm the seed-giving father of the Russians. I'm the seed-giving father of all living beings. That means all living beings have a connection with the Supreme. So human life should be directed towards what is my connection with the Supreme. And then whatever we do to maintain our bodies so that we can pursue this understanding of what is my connection with the Supreme, that's needed. We accept what is Ishavasamidang Savam Yakinsha Jagatyam Jagat Tina Chakina Bunjita Magvida Kasis Vidanam. Everything animate or inanimate within this universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. Therefore, one should accept those things for himself which are set aside as his quota, and not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Everything belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to him. I should accept whatever I need for my quota, what I need to live, to pursue the goal of life. Then, Narada Muni's instructions are very relevant and applicable. One should accept what one needs. But if one has no concept whatsoever of why they need to maintain the human form of life, if it's simply without a goal, there could be no peace. There's no shelter. There's no ultimate shelter. And there's no ultimate goal for the mind that always needs something better. And Krishna simply saying, I can give you that shelter. I can give you that peace. Krishna says, I can give you everything. Everything you need, I can give you. Whatever you need to live comfortably and happily in this world, all I ask is that you remember me. Mamana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru. Krishna says, think of me, worship me, offer your homage to me, surely you'll come to me. This is how to be connected with Krishna. And the simple method of connecting with Krishna, very simple. All he asks in this age is chant his names. He's so very kind, he's so very merciful. He's invested himself in his names. You want to have a connection with him? You chant his name, he's there, he's present. He's manifest all his potencies in his name. His personality is there in his name. Everything is there. Because he knows it's not very easy to perform deep meditation. It's not very easy to perform renunciation. It's not very easy to make big sacrifices. So therefore, because these things are so difficult in this age, he's come to make things very easy. Previously, Krishna said, Sava dhamma puritta jamami kam saranam braja. Aham tam sava papibhyo moksha shami masuchaha. He previously, Krishna said, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me. But Krishna came again as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he took this condition away. He said, simply take these names. E nechi oshadi maya nashi baro lagi. Hari nama mahamantra lao tumi magi. He said, I've come to bring this medicine. Take these names. That's all. Chant. Make the connection with me. Because he's very kindly made himself so accessible in his names. It's not very difficult. This age of Kali, Kalea dosha nade rajan asti heko mahadgana kirtanade the krishnasya mukta sangha param bhajet. Kalea dosha nade. Kali is an ocean of bad qualities. Kalea dosha nade asti heko mahadgana. But it has one redeeming quality. It's simply kirtanad eva krishnasya. If one simply chants Krishna's name, mukta param bhajat, mukta sangha param bhajat, simply by chanting Krishna's names, he gets liberation. He achieves the perfectional state of life simply by coming in contact with Krishna's names. So, in this current age where everybody is very concerned about having a good connection, then Krishna's teachings of Bhagavad Gita teach us how to have a good connection with him. And if we have a good connection, then everyone knows if you have a good connection, then something comes from the other end into your computer. In the same way, if you have a good connection with Krishna, Krishna says, to the degree that you surrender to your connection with me, I reciprocate accordingly. To the degree that you take my path, you can have that connection with me, I reciprocate. Ananyas chintayato mam yejana payopashante tesham nitya payuktanam yogakshema vahamyaham. It's as if you meditate upon me and you endeavor to come to me, that whatever you lack, I will preserve for you. What I will give to you, and whatever you have, I will preserve for you. I will help you. He'll help that. Tesham satatam yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. The dami buddhi yogam tam yena mambo piyanti today. To those who are endeavoring, worship me with love, I reciprocate. I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. These Krishnas says, I'm ready for the connection. Do you want it? I'll give you as much bandwidth as you need. Krishna can give unlimited bandwidth. And you don't have to pay for it. All you have to do, all he has is just simply chant his names and make the effort to remember him. This is Krishna consciousness. This is what our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, came to give us. And gave us in the Bhagavad Gita. These few verses we have spoken, only few among so many verses that are there. Everybody, please take Bhagavad Gita tonight, as Vanamali Pandit was mentioning. We'll be happy to sign, so that you can take Bhagavad Gita home and study these verses of Bhagavad Gita and make some connection with Krishna. And this way, learn the greatness of our previous acharyas and saints who taught us how to control the world by experiencing Vishayavini Vartante Naraharasya Dehina Rasa Vajam Rasopyasva Param Jishtvarnatar Vinavartate. The embodied soul may restrict himself from sense enjoyment, even though some taste still remains, but he ceases these by experiencing a higher taste, and he becomes fixed in his consciousness. Krishna gives the higher taste to help us. Prabhupada used to use the simple analogy that if you have a young child who's attracted to playing with knives, very dangerous business. If you try to take the knife away from the child, it becomes even more dangerous because the child will resist. When the child resists, dangerous. He said, but if you give the child a nice colorful toy, then to take the toy, he has to drop the knife. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has done for us. We're playing with knives. He's given us something very simple. Just chant. Read Bhagavad Gita. Hear Bhagavad Gita. Use the iPhone 10 to its full potential. And in this way, human life becomes very simple and more peace. Something everybody else would like to have. Thank you very much for your attention. Hare Krishna. Some questions, or should we chat?
Please ask any questions. This is one of the rare chants. Buddha personality sannyasis, they come once in a month or a year. And this is the first ever time where we had a program in the North Coast County. So please take this advantage. Don't be shy. Just ask.
Yes.
What is the Atma? What is Paramatma? What is the relation between these two?
Mm-hmm.
What someone has to do to make that connection?
Mm-hmm. Krishna says in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, for one who conquers the mind, super soul is reached and he attains tranquility. For such a man, heat and cold, happiness and distress, and honor and dishonor are all the same. He says specifically that first one has to conquer the mind to understand the super soul, who is Paramatma. Paramatma is the manifestation of the Supreme Lord who is situated within the heart of every living being. And in that manifestation, he fulfills two functions. He's Anumanta and Upadrashta. He's the witness, and he gives sanction. Because nothing can happen without his will. Just like a parent has a child, and the child is very demanding. Go into the supermarket, the child's sitting in the cart, pulling everything off the shelf. I want this, I want this, I want that. You know, the child wants, I want. So, but the child can't have unless the parent says, okay, you can have it. So, super soul is like that. He's Paramatma, he's witness. He witnesses the desires. It's described that he is like a person who understands the fragrance of a flower by being near the flower. Simply by being in the same way, the super soul who's situated within the heart can understand the desires of the heart and every living being. He knows what we're desiring. We may tell him what we want something else, but he knows everything. Because he's super soul. He's the knower of all fields, whereas the Atma is the knower of his field of activities. His Kshetra-gya, he is the knower of his Kshetra, which is his body, his mind, his subtle body. Atma is limited to to only what goes on in his body. But super soul is the knower in all bodies. So, therefore, the super soul, he functions as this witness and giving sanction. But the example is given in the Puranas of just like two birds sitting in the tree. One bird is eating the fruit of the tree, and the other bird is witnessing, just watching him, waiting for him to turn and to recognize him as his master. So he simply sits as witness, and the enjoying bird, that is the Atma, that is the soul, who has accepted his field of activities in that particular body, whatever body he has accepted in the particular lifetime. And the super soul is simply waiting for that Atma to turn and to accept the superior direction, not just the sanction, right? It's not, but just like when the parents say, okay, okay, you can have it. So the child may say, oh, my father wants me to have this. He gave it to me. It's not a difference between wanting to give and sanctioning it because you're so persistent that, all right, you can have. So in the same way, the living entity is so persistent to enjoy this world. And not, he can't have anything unless the Lord sanctions it. But the Lord wants him to have more. The Lord wants him to come back to him. So that is the difference between the Atma and Paramatma. The Atma is the knower of the field of activities within his body, and the Paramatma is the knower in all bodies. And he comes, he manifests himself as Paramatma with every living entity who is within this material universe, and simply so he can guide them and direct them and even give them what they deserve in their next life, life after life after life, waiting for them to turn to him and seek his superior direction, which is how to come to him. A very brief, general explanation, but